So we're in James chapter 3. We've been making our way through a study of this early book, this early letter that James wrote to the early church. And James, again, is a book of wisdom as much as anything. He deals with some really practical things. And there's nothing more practical than what he's going to bring up in chapter 3. It's something that has got man in trouble since the beginning, which is his tongue, the way he talks, his speech. And so he's going to illustrate the dangers of the tongue in a few different ways. And you'll see these as we read through this text. So let's start at verse 1, and we'll read the first 5 verses and then talk a little bit about them. So let's go to verse 1. He says, "Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness. For we all stumble in many ways. And if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle his whole body. If we put bits into the mouths of horses so that they obey us, we guide their whole bodies as well. Look at the ships also. Though they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are guided by a very small rudder wherever the will of the pilot directs. So also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts great things. How great a forest is set ablaze by such a small member." All right, so we began looking at this last week, and we dealt with the verse 1. He's talking about teachers and how if you're teaching, you need to be careful that you're teaching the truth. Okay, so we won't go back through that. But let's go to verse 2 just to kind of get springboarded in this study. He says, number 1, "For we all stumble in many ways." We'd all say amen to that, right? The Proverbs writer says in Proverbs 20, verse 9, "Who can say, 'I have made my heart pure, I am clean from my sin'?" What's the point of the Proverbs writer? That's difficult, right? It's difficult to live a pure life, and we all struggle with it. Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 20. Notice what Solomon says in Ecclesiastes 7:20. He says, "Surely there is not a righteous man on earth who does good and never sins." A very practical kind of statement, isn't it? It's very straightforward. There's no ambiguity to it, but it's powerful, right? No man can call himself righteous on his own. Where does righteousness come from? God, right? God has to impute that to us. That has to be something given to us by God, by Jesus himself. 1 John chapter 1 and verse 8. 1 John 1:8, John says, "If we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves, and the truth is not in us." John just calls us a liar. If you say you have no sin, he just says you're a liar, and so you sinned. So it's just simply not the truth. So what's his point here in verse 2 when he says, "For we all stumble in many ways"? He's not talking in this text about the many ways. What is he talking about? What's his focus of chapter 3, verses 1 through 12? The tongue, our speech, right? So he sets up this discussion by talking about the fact that we as human beings know we struggle with sin anyway. So we should be what? Extra careful when it comes to our tongue. So he says, if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle his whole body. What's the point of that?
The tongue is one of the hardest things to control.
You may want to add to that. I think that's right. So we demonstrate a real sense of self-control when we can control our speech. In the fruits of the Spirit in Galatians chapter 5, what's the last fruit? Self-control, right? Now I think Paul is broadly speaking self-control in all areas of our life, but I think James would apply it specifically to the tongue. So he gives us three comparisons or three ways to illustrate the destructive yet powerful nature of the tongue. What are they? What? What's the first thing he says? A bridle, right? The bridle in a horse's mouth. Horse can be a pretty big animal. I've been horseback riding, I know, one time. I think just once. And I don't really want to ever go again. It's not my thing. That's a lot of beast to control. And I just felt the whole time, if he got a wild hair, I'd just be on for the ride. So I just felt it was better for me if I just used the instruments God gave me, my feet, to carry me around. But a horse is strong. Yet, those who are good on a horseback understand that they can control that horse through the use of the bridle. You steer the horse in the direction you want him to go or her, right? You're the one in control as long as you have the bridle. How does that particular illustration relate to the tongue? What is he trying to get us to understand from that? So when we get control over our speech, it helps ourselves to go in a particular direction, right? It gives us more control over other areas of our life. So the first illustration is the horse, but he didn't stop there. He really wants to drive this home. The next illustration is what? So the first one's the bridle. What's the second illustration? The what? The rudder. And it's interesting. He's very specific here, isn't he? He says the very small rudder. What's his point? Well, this is a comparison, isn't it? He's showing you. Look at these gigantic ships. We've had the opportunity a couple times, and I'm sure some of y'all have done this too. We've been on a cruise ship. I found it interesting. They were talking, I saw online, they were comparing the Titanic. Now, the Titanic, I mean, it's called the Titanic, right? That means huge, right? Very big. But have you ever seen a size comparison between the Titanic and our modern cruise ships, cruise liners? It's tiny. It looks like a little tugboat. Yes. It's nowhere near the size. They're gigantic and powerful. And they have these huge engines inside of them that drive it along. But even those big, gigantic ships have rudders. Our ships are controlled by rudders. The rudder, in comparison, is a very small part of the ship. Now, a rudder on a cruise ship is going to look pretty big by itself. You isolate it, but then when you sit it next to the ship, it's not nearly of any great proportion to the ship itself. Yet, that ship is under the direction of that rudder. It's kind of like an airplane. Airplanes, we have huge airplanes, but they have a rudder on them. I've watched several of these shows. I like these airline crash shows. I can't watch them anymore because my son gets scared, but But you know, you go and you watch them, and these rudders, some had some kind of defect on it, and you have these crashes out of that because that plane is going to go where the rudder tells it to go. And if the rudder doesn't direct it properly, it's going to go, you know, it's not the descent that kills you. It's when you hit the ground, right? So he uses the rudder here of a ship, and he says that ship, it's huge, it's gigantic in comparison, but that rudder performs a very important and powerful service for the ship. What's the obvious comparison to the tongue? Yeah, I watched the thing the other day. I'm getting off on this. I'll shut up. But they were showing these big old gigantic planes coming into these areas where they have these big breezes come across there. And the air, the strip is here. The plane is coming in like this, right? It's completely turned almost perpendicular to the runway. And right at the end, he goes, whoop, and sets it on the line, and it lands. And it's like amazing. But that's that rudder that controls that. It's what whips the plane back around. So to get off planes and ships. What's the point James is trying to make? Roger? Just shows you how important direction is, right? And that's the point of all this. It's about direction. And our speech gives us direction. What that also means is that our speech, when we try to be hypocrites, our speech sometimes finds us out, right? It's our speech that often tells the health of our spiritual heart. And so it's important that we keep our speech pure, and that comes from a pure heart, right? And so he gives us two kind of really powerful demonstrations about the tongue and the speech. And then what's the final one? And he introduces it in verse 5. Forest fire, or just a little spark, right? Let's read this section. Let's go to verse 6. So verse 5, it ends with, "How great a forest is set ablaze by such a small fire." Again, notice the descriptor there. Small fire. And the tongue is a fire, world of unrighteousness. Some translations have the word wickedness. The tongue is set among our members, staining the whole body and setting on fire the course of life. And set on fire by hell. So he gets to this third illustration, and he talks about a fire and how small of a fire it takes to engulf a whole forest. Y'all remember Smokey the Bear? You remember Smokey? Only you can prevent forest fires. And I remember that campaign. Number one, I was young at the time, so he was cool to me. And I remember campfires. Make sure you put your campfire out, that you don't leave ashes. Even a small ash, ember, from that can cause a forest fire. Fire spreads quickly. I should have left this one up to Cy. He really could go a long way with this particular discussion, but he understands fire. I think he just burned a house, didn't you? And it doesn't take long, does it? How, like, I'm putting you on the spot, but like a 3-bedroom house, how long would it take if that fire was left alone to burn that house to the ground? Every 60 seconds it doubles. Just think about that. I mean, it just eats up that fuel from the wood and from the other materials that just ignite it. Now, what's the obvious point? A negative, a misspoken, ill-spoken word can set ablaze. I mean, and it can destroy a family. I was just talking to somebody today about family situations and how difficult it is in their family right now because there's ill feelings and those things get out of control and they burn and they tear apart families. What has it done to churches? Members of the church, families in different locations, and they've been destroyed by gossip, by backbiting, by mean, ugly ways of speaking about one another. Our speech can do great damage. Now, it can also do great good. But I think I don't know if I mentioned it in this class or not, but and I assume this is still true. I know this study was done a few years ago now, but they say for every ill-spoken word, every negative comment made, it takes, I believe, 10 positive comments to overcome that one negative. And it just lets you to know the power. How many of us can do something and have people tell us how good we did, right? And then one person say a negative thing, and you concentrate, fixate on that one negative comment. You completely forget all the positive. Because in that scenario, all those positives far outweighed the negative. But you fixate on the negative. That's what we do. And so, looking at it from this perspective, we need to be careful with how we say things. Even if we're not ill-intended, here's the other kind of dangerous part of this. Do I always have to have ill intent to start a negative fire? I don't. But it's just, I speak without thinking. I'm not considering the consequences. And I just kind of speak rashly. What about, you ever been angry and said something out of anger and had deep regret? Everybody go ahead and raise your hand. You've all done it. I have to. Right? We've all done that. And I had somebody say this to me, and I kind of wish this wasn't true, but it is true. When you say something to somebody, you can work to ask for forgiveness. And hopefully they do. But once you've spoken a word, you can never take it back. You can't grab it and put it back in. And so it's made me cautious. Now, I've said negative things that I wish I could have grabbed, but I couldn't. And so you just work to overcome it. And hopefully with time, you move on. People forget it and don't hold on to it. But we actually give people power over us when we speak rashly. So he says that these fires that are started, they stain the whole body. That they can set on the entire course of life. What does that mean? It's interesting. The literal translation of that phrase, the course of life, is, could literally be translated the wheel of birth. And wheel, W-H-E-E-L, like a wheel. The whole wheel of birth. And that's kind of fascinating to me. What do you think he means by that? It's setting on fire the whole course, the entire course of life. Okay. It does, yeah, and it has long Sometimes what we say has long-lasting consequences. Not always, but sometimes it can have very long-lasting consequences. Yes. And have you ever had somebody or seen where somebody has done great damage to their reputation so that, like, forever they get remembered a certain way? I've seen that happen. I no Indiana fans in here, are there? I don't want to offend you, but Bobby Knight, man. Dude was a good coach, but man, he had a filthy tongue, didn't he? And I can remember some of his rants that, like, stand out in time, and you don't want to have your whole image of somebody shaped by what they say, but when it's characteristic of a life, you begin to develop an image of a person very negatively, and it becomes very hard to overcome that. And so he calls it a stain on the whole body, right? It affects you throughout. Throughout your life, throughout your whole body. And then he says, it's set on fire by hell. Now, I've mentioned this before, but I haven't mentioned it in this class. But so, Gehenna is the term used in the Greek here. And this is the term for the place of eternal punishment. Not to be confused with Hadas, which is the Greek term referring to the grave, right? So you separate those two out. What is fascinating about that term is, you know who uses it every time except for once? Jesus. That term is exclusively Jesus' term except for one writer. And here you just read it. James is the only guy who uses that term. Now, Paul gives us descriptions that relate to hell. John gives us descriptions that relate to hell. But the word itself is only used by Jesus, I think, 9 times, and once by James. So that's kind of interesting. He says, set on fire by hell. What do you think he means by that? And it may not be what you think initially. Go over, if you will, very well-known verse, but let's go to Revelation 21:8. All right, Revelation 21:8. Notice what John writes. He says, but as for the cowardly, the faithless, the detestable, as for murderers, the sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters. All right, that list, all are what? They're all sins, right? And sins that will land you where if they're unforgiven? In hell. Notice what he says. He gives us this list: cowardly, faithless, detestable, murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars. Their portion will be where? In the lake, will be in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur, which is the second death. What lake is he talking about? He's talking about Gehenna. He's talking about hell. And he's talking about what's going to happen after Jesus returns on Judgment Day and judgment has been made, and all of those sinful people who are outside of Jesus are going to be cast into the lake of fire, or Gehenna. So let's go back to James. And I think the way he's applying this term, what he means by this, is not that necessarily hell gives the tongue power or the fire the tongue creates. But I think what he's saying is that if we continue in evil speech, where will our place be? Going to go to hell. And so I think he's trying to make a really powerful, sobering point that if you don't control your tongue, it can cost you your soul. It's what scares me about when I see Christians saying things or posting things online that are not moral, they're not Christian. I'm like, you're a Christian. How can you post things with that kind of language in them? Or making comments that are not Christ-like, tearing people down, saying things in a derogatory way, using cursing and evil speech. We can't do that. We got to clean that out. I mean to pick on this, but like when you're posting something, you're reposting something, you're sharing it. Is what you're sharing appropriate? Does it have appropriate language? What about the person you're posting it from? Do they use appropriate language? You got to be careful about all those things. And so when we talk about speech, that's another point I probably should bring up. Is he just talking about, in our modern day context, just words we say? Is it just words we say? All means of communication. So what are the means? How do we communicate in our modern vernacular? How do we communicate? Mitch? We write down. We write books. We write emails. We write posts online. We write letters anymore. We write a few letters now. Right? Huh? We do here. Yes, we do. We'll do it tonight. We text. Right? You send text messages? What are other ways we communicate? Okay, in a symbolic way, our actions do. Yeah. Choice of music, what are we communicating through those kind of choices, right? What? Absolutely. Body language, how we treat people. Hey, and we talk about words we say, but what about how we say them? What message does that communicate? Right? It's a very different statement. If I see you first thing in the morning and I go, "Hey, good morning, how are you doing?" As opposed to, "Good morning. How are you today?" I say the same words, but communicate a totally different message. We should think about that. What kind of message? I did leave that out today. Normally I do, yeah. I'm just trying to make sure you're keeping up with me. If I say it every week, then it just becomes what I do every week and everybody forgets I do it. You're like that. I've done it twice and I've gotten caught out both times. It's working. See, they're trying to communicate a message. She's got a phone call. So he says that it's set on fire by hell, verse 6. Verse 7, "For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and sea creature, can be tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison." So should we just walk around and not say anything? Since we can't tame it? What does he mean then, right? Be careful, right? Use caution. Be cautious about how you use your tongue. Got to verse 8. So we did pretty good, right? We'll stop there. I'm out of time. Okay, Jody's got one last point.
Ecclesiastes 5 says a fool is wronged by his much speaking. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people just rattle on when they really should.
Yeah, and there's another one. Oh, man, I used to have this memorized because I loved it. Even a fool seems wise when he speaks little. That's kind of the, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but I like that one too. Yeah. Instead of speaking and revealing the truth to all. Right. Is that Proverbs 17? I kind of think that's what he's saying in a nicer way. He's saying, like, sometimes just shut up, right? We won't say that to our kids, right? We tell them, don't tell people to shut up. But he's kind of telling us, just close your mouth. Yes, sir, Dwayne. Completely reveal the truth. Great, great study. A lot of good info here. We'll pick back up next week in verse number 9 and continue forward. So if you want to go ahead and read ahead, well, that's where we'll be. We'll finish up talking about the tongue and our speech, and then we'll go on and talk about wisdom, godly wisdom, and then look forward to chapter 4 in the next few weeks. Again, thank you all so much for being here. We'll go ahead and dismiss from this period.